Welcome, everybody, back to Leaders of Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Ferraro, bringing to you today an incredible guest, Scott Drucker from Compass Real Estate. Scott, how are you?
Good, good. How are you doing today?
Great, man. We're so excited to have you on. I'm going to read to the audience and the people watching a little bio about you because we've had great real estate agents on before from all different backgrounds. What I'm so excited to have you on to talk about is your background being in sports, being a former sports agent. So we have a lot of questions to ask you, but let's dive into Scott's background. Scott's journey from professional baseball to real estate in Miami epitomizes his versatile skill set and steadfast dedication. Renowned for his stellar career with the Oakland Athletics and Detroit Tigers, he has earned acclaim as the most interesting man in baseball on the global stage. Upon returning to Miami, Scott seamlessly transitioned into sports agency, where he became a sports agent, excelling in contract negotiations and brand management through social media. His entrepreneurial ventures include top-ranked MLB blog, superkicks.com, and underscore his innovative spirit beyond the sports arena. Actively involved in the community initiatives and philanthropy, Scott's vibrant persona and marketing expertise ensure each client transaction embodies excellence and success. Scott, we got a ton to talk about. Thank you again for being on, man. Super excited.
No, really appreciate you guys having me.
So I am a prior athlete. My whole family's business was athletics. Obviously, you were excelling in the professional world of baseball and then became a sports agent. So talk a little bit before we get into your current market and what's going on in Miami and what you have going on in your current business. Let's let the audience learn a little bit about quickly becoming a professional athlete in any sport is hard. Becoming a professional baseball player who has any tenure is so, so difficult. Let's talk a little bit about that journey for you and then going into the sports agency before getting into real estate.
Yeah, I think like any child growing up, we all played t-ball and certain sports. Luckily, my parents, they did push me because they saw I specialized in it. I wasn't going to be a 6'6" basketball player. Size didn't have the size for football, so kind of baseball stuck with me. And luckily, I'm glad I did. Luckily, I also had my blinders on throughout the whole process. When I got recruited from the University of Florida, I never even took an official visit. I basically was just so happy to be recruited. Signed on the dotted line, and my first day at school was my first day at school.
Oh, wow.
So kind of enjoyed the run in the SEC. There was some coaching changes, some roster changes, so I ended up transferring to the University of Tennessee, where I finished there and got drafted by the Oakland A's. Played with them for a couple of years, got traded to the Detroit Tigers, and then finished my career in Taiwan. But as you well know, being a former athlete, those, you know, time in the gym and the nutrition and yep. You know, just the commitment is a whole different level that I think, you know, helps us in the long haul with all of our, you know, occupations nowadays, especially in real estate.
Yeah. All right. So first question off that, my son's playing baseball. He's 8. when did your parents know and you know where, we got something here?
I would first say, is your son right-handed or left-handed? There's time to change too.
Oh, really? Okay. He's righty.
Okay. I mean, I was right-handed. Of course, you know, left-handers, for whatever reason, there's, you know, less of them in baseball and they're more desirable. So, you know, left-handed pitchers, left-handed bat. You know, the throwing part may be a little difficult, although Billy Wagner did change. You know, when he broke one of his arms, he ended up messing around throwing with the left hand, and yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. But I think I noticed when I was probably about 12 or 13, I took that extra step just from physicality demeanor and poise. And I wanted it more, I guess, at that time. Yeah. That's when I realized.
Okay. So make my son be a lefty and got it. Okay. 12 or 13. I mean, because at a young age, you let him, you know, love the sport. And then you were excelling right around that age. You knew something. It was time to get to the next level. You went on, crushed it in the college ranks, and then you got to play pro ball. So I'm sure you get this all the time. What was it like being in the pro ball ranks, playing pro baseball in the stadiums? Like, what was that like?
Well, the funny thing is, a lot of people don't realize baseball has the minor leagues, whereas the NBA or NFL, you automatically get drafted, you go right to the league, you're playing in front of tens of thousands of fans. Right. In baseball, you can get a nice signing bonus, which allows you to kind of, you know, eat properly, train properly in the off season. But for the most part, most of these guys don't get signing bonuses, and we're off to Middletown America making, you know, $1,200 a month in hopes to grow every year from A ball to double A to triple A to the big league. So, you know, when you get to triple A, you're making $2,000 a day. Whereas if you're in the big leagues as a rookie, you're making if you're in triple A, you're making $2,000 a month. Whereas in the big leagues, you're making $2,000 a day, rookie status. So, being able to travel, it was a humbling experience to be in small parts of America that, you know, normally wouldn't vacation to later in life. But the fanfare was great. Being able to interact with kids in, you know, the stadiums, being a part of the community service, you know, giving back to the communities was a great job, you know, great thing that I, you know, enjoyed. But then also being able to travel to the bigger stadiums, bigger limelight, was always a great blessing in disguise. I just put my head down and always worked hard.
Yeah, that's beautiful, man. I mean, it's like every kid's dream, right? To get to that level and do that. And you were able to do it. And then you start to transition into the sports agency world before you go into real estate. So how long were you in the sports agency world? And was it just an easy transition for you to go from, wait a minute, I want to ask you a question before that. I can't miss this. The most interesting man how? Go ahead, tell me. How does that happen?
I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit. I was always a hustler. They used to call me Red in the locker room, kind of like the guy from Shawshank Redemption that can kind of get you anything. Yeah. So I was just always wheeling and dealing, whether it was, you know, off the field clothing or, you know, supplements, or, I mean, even my bobblehead doll here, you know. I was always very quirky and entrepreneurial. So yeah. To me, I guess I got that title just from being, you know, a little overzealous about everything, you know, off the field as well.
Okay. So you had your hands in a lot of different pots. You're always wheeling and dealing, making moves.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
So the most interesting man, then you turn into going into sports agency world. Was that just an easy transition to go from playing and being represented to then go ahead and be representing athletes? Was that just easy for you?
Yeah. The good part about it was the group that represented me while I played was the ones that took me on and said, hey, listen, you just retired. You know, would you like to, you know, try this side of the game? Which, of course, was an easy transition, having been in these players' shoes before and in the locker room with them. You know, you kind of understand what they're looking for in regards to an agent representing them, whether it's marketing deals or contractual stuff or just even facilitating shipping of cars and helping them move when they get called up and down. So definitely an easy transition. But then again, it was also a little challenging because these guys that you're now trying to recruit were like, you just got into the business. So there was some, you know, trust, of course, and business savvy parts of it, but definitely it was very rewarding when you do recruit a guy that ends up making it to the big leagues and you're one of the first calls he gets. You know, it's very rewarding, refreshing. And then you try to rush to get them and the wife up to, you know, Yankee Stadium to make it in time to watch his debut.
That's awesome. So how long were you in the sports agency world?
So I did it for about 5.5 years, I believe. And then just kind of needed a disconnect from sport. It was kind of getting the sports agent world is getting a little ugly. There was a lot of undercutting, people stealing clients left and right, whining and dining them. So sometimes the bigger agencies would just kind of overwhelm some of these smaller agencies that couldn't afford to keep up. Yeah. So I just needed a little change of scene. Luckily, a close friend of mine that I went to high school with was getting back into real estate, and Compass was starting in South Florida at the time. So he's like, hey, you want to be a realtor? I'm like, sure, what do I need? He's like, you got a heartbeat and a pulse, go take this class. Boom, you're a realtor.
Yeah. You're like, great. Yeah. And so you get into the real estate world. So the first thing is just the preconceived notions of professional athlete to professional sports agent to now being in the real estate world. Was it a difficult transition to go to that field, or was there a lot of similarities with the being a sports agent?
It's a great question because a lot of people ask that. Even people that I still go back to baseball fields and run into old scouts and agents colleagues of mine, and they ask me the same question. And there's a lot of similarities because you have player X in the community, because in baseball you can get drafted out of high school or college,
right?
And player X is signed with the University of Miami, but he wants to sign and he feels his number is $1 million signing bonus, which is fine. But if the market dictates he's only worth $500,000, he's unlikely to get drafted and he's probably going to college. So it's very similar in the housing market when you take on listing appointments. Hey, we feel your house is valued at this based on comparables, whereas seller may say, well, I think my house is worth 2x. And that's where it's a sense, conversation that needs to be had. Well, for you to sell your house, you need to be, realistic and manage your own expectations. So a lot of similarities, and that's part of it. I also try to wear many caps and facilitating throughout the whole process. To me, it's more than just a contractual ordering appraisals, inspectors, this, that, and the other. I want to be able to, hey, here's a list of all the hottest restaurants in the area. Here's childcare help. Here's, the best places to shop, certain things. So I just want to be able to, be a liaison, a concierge to the whole transaction rather than just a strictly transactional deal.
Got it. So you get into the real estate game and you become a licensed agent and with Compass. And what was it like for you? I'm sure you had a lot of database because of what you already did in the sports agency world. Was it easier, the same, or more difficult than you expected?
I believe it was more difficult because I'm more customer service driven than anything. I'm not going to say I'm the best realtor in the sense of I can tell you what style any property is, certain types of flooring, should I? I'm sure. But to me, it's always, I'd rather find out the answer than just be a yes guy, where a lot of agents in our area at least will say, yeah, you can knock down that wall. Yeah, you can do that. So it was definitely a challenge initially getting in. Same thing kind of when I left playing to become the sports agent, because you want to educate yourself and find a mentor that will guide you through the process and help you when you fall, or, and my job is to not have any curveballs thrown, pun intended. So definitely challenging. Of course, you want to do right for the clients. I mean, I've learned over time, I've worked with clients for one day and I've worked with clients for 2 years. I've had to tell my wife's boss not to buy a particular property because I just didn't feel it was the right one. Whereas many agents may just try to get a transaction done because you don't know if, they're going to stick with you, or maybe they're, end up renting or drag you along for the ride.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I think that what happens a lot of times is, us as agents, you're trying, especially when you're starting, you're trying to figure this whole thing out because you're like, okay, I got this much bandwidth of account savings and I'm on 100% commission. So I have to figure out how many leads are going to come in. Where am I going to get them from? What am I spending my money on? And then at the same time, you're also trying to be amazing at what it is that you do. I mean, there's a lot of us like yourself that pride ourselves on being incredible at customer service because you've had to deal with people. When you deal with sports agency world, the product is not a house. The product is a person, a living, breathing person with emotions. So you're playing sports agent, but you're also a psychologist. You're also doing a lot of different things and you're almost doing kind of, there's a million different things happening. When you're in the real estate world, we try to make their listing presentation as good as we can. We want to learn everything we can about the local market. We want to be able to go in there and say we have the best ability for marketing your property. And then what tends to happen is then you look around and go, I think I have all these great skills, but I'm watching other agents take listings that aren't trying as hard, that don't bring the same amount as ability as I do for my clients to get more money or take care of them. And so that can be frustrating. What were some of the ways that you used to, let's say, lead gen? Obviously, I'm going to guess your database was a huge part, but then also let's talk social media, things like that.
Yeah, I always try to be a little diverse and eclectic. I mean, I got my name changed when I was younger. I was born Scott with 2 T's. Now I'm Scott with 1 T. So to me, it was always trying to separate myself and be a little different and edgy, I guess.
Most interesting man, you're the most interesting. Right. There's a reason why. So
I think with that, when we first started not having much inventory personally, I tried to, our social media brand was more of localized stuff, like cool places to eat, fun things going on in the weekend, really just be a little more organic rather than the typical, I mean, we didn't even have much just sold, just listed. So I had to put some other fluff in there where I actually saw more engagement than some of our other stuff recently. Yes, it's nice to post and be in front of people with just sold, just listed, this, that, and the other. But I think the humility is great too. Like some of the blooper reels, just fell out of contract, just failed inspection. Trying to be a little edgy. Cause I think that, just like I said, shows humility, shows human nature of our business and some of the behind the scenes that a lot of people don't assume. A lot of people just think we list the house, we post pictures of it, wait for it to get sold and then cash a check. You know, but then we're chasing the next check. So yeah, I think there's a lot of things like that that I use to differentiate myself. I, you know, we talked off before we started this, just LinkedIn was a huge caveat to me, because to me, LinkedIn has more of the wealth advisors, the, you know, financial planners, the real people, decision makers with money or surround people with money. So don't get me wrong, Instagram's great. Yep. A lot of just window shopping to me, you know, the real people are LinkedIn, you know, for my business. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of people that kill it on the TikTok, Instagram and everything else otherwise, but LinkedIn's been a huge thing for me.
So out of everything that you, so obviously database, and we talked before we got started here, I think one of the biggest things that you do really, really well is your ability to isolate potential clients or put yourself in a position to be around places to get referred or be around people that are the connector. And then you stay on top of them. You're where you need to be at the right time. And you use these specific platforms that go to specifically to your clientele. I think there's a lot of agents who don't know who it is that they want to work with. I start off when I talk to agents, are you demographic or are you geographic? I mean, do you have a clientele that you niche with, or do you have a block that you want to work on? Because these are completely different kinds of things, right? So you're really an amazing person at being able to isolate your niche and who you want to work with. And the platform that you used is the LinkedIn, but then building up this business using your CRM, did you keep working on building that up and follow up and staying in that world?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm super organized, but I am guilty of not having a clean CRM. I preach what I should be doing, but I'm not. My biggest caveat is referrals. I probably spend, you know, whereas most agents may spend, you know, ad revenue on social platforms, I spend traveling to feeder markets, you know, whether it's New York, whether it's Connecticut, whether it's Chicago, and go meet, do a sales meeting or do a happy hour. And, you know, Levy Meyer, a local agent in Miami as well, it's kind of started this in a sense. I've kind of piggybacked it. And luckily, you know, we work in two different markets in Miami. We share deals all the time, and we kind of, you know, do this together and go out to these markets, which I feel is for my business is done very well, because I would say at least 70% of my business is referrals from other agents.
Yep. That's huge. So, and a lot of people don't know how to do that. So they refer to just paying for leads. Right. And because that's not really a skill that they know how to do. So if 70% of your business is referrals, is the biggest way, so would you say the biggest way that you do that is you like to travel, you like to go out and visit other markets and do that sort of thing? Is that, would you say that's
100%, 100% between the Compass platform with our retreats that we have, and then these subcommittees that we have that do their own little mini retreats. I think that's the most valuable for me, because I need to be out in front of people, see my personality. I'm not one of those that is going to be on a mastermind platform, because I'm probably too brash about the way I talk about real estate. And some people might, you know, think, you know, just not, it might rub people the wrong way. So to me, that's the biggest thing. I think also just reminding people that how big we are at Compass, because I have such a diverse network. Somebody in St. Louis, a former teammate of mine, may not realize I have a connection to somebody, an agent in St. Louis or Greenwich or wherever. So I think also reminding our colleagues of that, because it's easy for someone, you know, neighbors talk, cousins talk, hey, I'm looking to buy a place in South Florida. Like, oh, I mean, you know, my agent actually has a buddy down there. He can help you, you know. There's just so many dots to connect, and a lot of great people within our Compass community that we can always put them in touch with.
I got it. So, I'm finding that more and more. I mean, this is why that the agents who have been really successful, either over a long period of time or even a short period of time, they're really not doing it in the high end, in more affluent areas. They're not doing it without being ingrained within a network. You're not going to come into high end areas and think you're going to spend, you know, $5,000 a month on Facebook ads and you're all of a sudden going to be successful at that. I mean, maybe, but not in the big markets. It's going to be work. It's really hard to make the connections and be able to do exactly what it is that you say you're going to do and be able to help the people out that you say you're going to help and be there. And I refer business out to LA and vice versa. And that's because they know when they get a client and they know when they send me a client they're going to be taken care of the same way they would get the same type of representation from you. So
exactly.
That's a big tip for any agent watching, and take that from Scott. Scott has built a career in multiple different types of businesses where relationships and doing what he says and being a stand-up person and being great at what he had to cement all of that. And you don't get to that position with working with these clients unless you are all those things, because they would never ever give you that opportunity. But network is key. Let me ask you, Scott, Miami, this market currently, let's get into the actual nitty gritty of what's going on. You told me an awesome story. I'd love for you to share that before, because I know you got a big one coming up if you're open to sharing that with everybody. And then talk a little about how your market's going. Yeah, tell us about the story, what the deal you got going on, and then how the market is.
Yeah, so during COVID, I got reached out to on LinkedIn by a financial planner. I had no connection to the client. He had reached out, said his client was looking for a high-end rental in Miami. I figured, sure, got nothing to lose. Ended up meeting him at the property, asked him where the client was. He's like, I'm going to decide for the client. I'm like, okay, now I'm thinking I'm going to get catfished or just waste of time. Okay. Long story short, the client ends up renting this very high-end place for a couple months during COVID. I meet him, very nice couple. The next year, they, you know, now that we have a relationship, he rents again. And now they are starting a family or having a third, growing their family. And now they're purchasing in South Florida in a very nice $12 million property. So it was just, you know, cultivating, you know, the old cliche, renters turn into buyers. You know, you take care of somebody, you're memorable. I think it all just, you know, karma, good juju, whatever you want to call it. It all worked out. It's a very nice deal. We're closing in the next couple of weeks. It actually is nice. A sports player's property. So
it's a professional athlete's property. Just of course how the world works. You didn't know that going in, but it's a professional athlete's property. But what you didn't mention there is what you told me before. There was some stuff going on where you were representing that client on something else that they were going to do, and there was a pivot. And unless you're the kind of agent that you are, they might not know how to handle that. Could you talk about maybe how you made that? Because some agents might not know how to handle that spot.
Yeah, we were under contract, or what I assumed we were under contract with another property in the area. I'm booking inspections. Clients are booking flights to come down for everything. Come to find out, the seller's wife didn't want to sell the property now. So she happened to not sign the contract. So we had the husband's signature, but not the wife. So technically it wasn't a, you know, but I was going off of good word, good faith by the seller's agent. Yeah, this is good. Same thing, long story short. We had to nix the deal and pivoting. I was like, they love this area. They love this community. There wasn't enough inventory. Let me get on the phone. Let me start reaching out to whoever I can. Actually, it was through another Compass agent, said, call this agent. She has something. It happened to be an off-market property, and we all fell in love with it very quickly. So
there's so many moving pieces there. You knew how to pivot with a client. You knew to go to your referral network and your database of people to find something off market. Look how that, if people listening, I hope you understand, you hear that deal. That's a $12+ million deal that was put together 100% from start to finish, all from behind the scenes. You know, it's an off market deal that's being purchased through a connection that was made years ago by Scott's ability to use social media and LinkedIn and his personality with different people. Like, all this different stuff is huge for people to understand. That's really where this world is when you're getting to these points. So again, congratulations, Scott, on all the success on that. I know that'd be awesome. I want you to send me a picture when you close, just thumbs up, man. I know you'll be posting it.
Of course, I gotcha.
So talk a little bit about the Miami market. We just came through 2023. Everybody had different experiences with that year. And now going into 2024, everybody expects it to be a little bit better. Why don't you talk a little about what it is that you see on the horizon for that?
Yeah, I've had a couple closings already. So the year's kind of starting off pretty well. Of course, the old, you know, story, everybody talks interest rates, you know, that's always the sensitive subject. Luckily, they've been a little more favorable. Yep. So we have seen more, you know, buyers out. Prices in Miami are still a little, you know, a little higher than they should be. Okay. You know, it's a sunny place for shady people. So, you know, you got sellers that, you know, are a little out in left field, using all my baseball puns today.
Okay.
But, you know, it's South Florida. We have three airports between West Palm, Fort Lauderdale, Miami. We have two ports. We're close to, you know, the Caribbean. Of course, every 30 minutes, there's a flight to, you know, LaGuardia or JFK. So we still have that, you know, New York base. And we're seeing, you know, the Blackstones and the Citadels and all these, you know, big hedge fund companies and are coming down here. So, and setting up shop. So we're a tax friendly state. I don't see us going anywhere. I think the prices, you know, have settled a little. They're more realistic. But then again, you know, rock star agent in our office, Liz Hogan, selling $38 million of dirt that, you know, somebody's knocking down. So you have the extremes.
Yeah.
You have, you know, the middle of the road first time home buyers. So it's just, I always go back. I just got a New York couple that was referred to me yesterday, and they have a very healthy budget, but for what they want, I might have to, you know, be a little upfront with them out the gates, because that's the only thing with Miami where there is inventory, but, you know, for what some people want or first time home, they may have to put a little love in it or not get every box checked off. They're not going to get the unicorn. They might get the pony.
Yep. Yep. And I'm finding in my area, and I don't know, it probably sounds like it's around the same for you, that when the off-market property, because the property is off-market, does not mean that you're all of a sudden going to get some incredible deal. It just might be the best properties are off-market as far as the actual value of something, like the actual product. But it doesn't mean financially it's some better financial deal. We're seeing that. Like, we have a lot of people now are kind of feeling like, well, I rather have my property be sold off market because that's where everything good is. Nobody wants to be on the market anymore. It's just different than
it
used to be.
Which is funny you say that, because we have an off market compass group that our sales manager put together with, you know, the 200 plus agents just in the small, you know, Miami Beach, Coconut Grove area. And that thing daily is just notification. Anybody have this? I have this. You know, it seems like, you know, it's that sexy, I want, what do you have?
Yeah.
And then, like you said, hey, listen, if somebody has a number and someone's seen everything that's out there, they're willing to pay a premium, good for them. Let's get two people together and make a deal happen. But that little thread that we have going on has been more active than anything I've even seen on my own collections with my own buyers.
It's like the real gold listings that everybody has. I mean, it's so different than maybe 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago where it was like off market. What does that mean? And it's like nothing. You only got to have it on market. It's different now. It is really a world where the ability for technology, especially being with Compass, our ability in the exclusive off market platforms, the ability that we have to now communicate off markets, because that was the tricky part before. Is somebody might have a property or a product, but there was really difficult way. It was really hard to communicate that to other people in the networks. For now, it's a lot different. You can really work that. So we have that kind of same thing. We might need to steal a little bit of what you guys have going on down there. That's not a bad
idea. And it's a great thing. It's a great thing too, as a price guiding, you know, putting it on off market and seeing if anybody even reaches out and then be like, okay, seller, like we're a little out, you know, we need to adjust this anyway, whether we were to go to market or not, because no one's called me on this, you know, in weeks or months, whatever the case may be. But it's a great, put all these agents together, because it just, like you said, it's an easier way to get access information quicker, share with potential buyers, sellers.
Yeah, beautiful. So let me ask you, as far as your personal business goes, what's your goals here going forward? Where do you see yourself going the next couple of years within this business?
I'm kind of fly by the seat of my pants. Like, I play a lot of golf. So last Q4, when it was a little slower, it was kind of nice to have a little breather and play golf. But then again, I'm kind of like, well, where's the next business? Of course, we all have goals and we want to do things. But then again, like I said, it's really weird how my business is. I'll go stagnant with nothing. And then all of a sudden I get hit up three people. Oh, my cousins need to sell. Uncle needs to sell. And then these two guys need to buy. Like, so I kind of like that unknown balance. I know it's not for everybody. But to me, it's kind of allows me to control the narrative a little, because I don't want to be too overwhelmed. I mean, even though I'm on a team, I'm kind of my own agent. I've never had so many listings myself right now. So I also want to make sure I service everybody the same way, whether it's the $100,000 property investment or the $20 million listing, you know, and anything that falls in between.